Good morning, everyone. Thanks for listening in to Peyto's first quarter 2014 results conference call. In the room with me today, we've got the entire Peyto management team, consisting of Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, Kathy Turgeon, our CFO, Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration, JP Lachance, our VP of Exploitation, Tim Louie, our VP of Land, and of course, we have Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Rep. And Jim, I see you've collected a bunch of questions, so why don't we turn it over to you?
Okay, for those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, in our first quarter 2014 news release, we've shown a large increase in production as compared with the first quarter last year and nearly doubled that percentage increase in funds from operation. Where does this put us in terms of our ability to sustain the increased dividend we just announced and our continued growth?
Jim, I think, when we looked at the dividend increase this time around, it was really more from the perspective of the growth in our asset base and the underlying earnings or profits that we've been generating with that growth, rather than the effect of the latest gas price rally. So, the current forward strip, when you look at it, really only shows gas prices in excess of $4 until sort of next March, and then everything falls back into the three range, which means we can't really expect that a sustainable dividend increase is going to be supported by $4 gas prices. It has to be there with the $3 gas price that we really have in the longer term on the horizon. So when we looked at the dividend and the ability to sustain that increase, it really was in light of a much lower gas price environment than what we currently have, because this one looks to be anyway rather temporary. So it really had to be based on the growth of our asset base, the 28% per share production growth that we've seen year over year. And, as we say in our MD&A, I mean, the dividends are funded from earnings, so we're looking at growth in the earnings, while at the same time the capital program and our continued production growth and reserves growth and the growth in our asset base is funded from cash flow, debt, and equity. So, our asset base is well funded at this point. We've got a lot of plans to be investing a record amount of capital this year, and that program is also very well funded going forward. And we've got bolstered cash flow, we've got lots of bank lines, and we did an equity issue at the start of the year. So we've got lots of funding for a very aggressive capital program going forward, and we've got the profits coming off the business and from the growth of that asset that support that sustainable dividend.
Okay, turning to our VP of Exploitation, JP Lachance. JP, we've included a table showing the evolution of our drilling efficiency over time, and this puts the first quarter drilling efficiency in comparison to the previous 3 years' results. Can you provide some context on the importance of this to Peyto's returns?
Yes, Jim, the table you're referring to in the press release shows the average cost of our wells, the drill depths and cycle timing, along with activity levels over the last 3 years and into Q1 this year. It shows we've been drilling progressively longer horizontal laterals while managing to drill to keep drill costs the same. We've done this by continually refining our drilling practices and taking advantage of our existing infrastructure. And what this means is that we get to access more of the reservoir at the same cost. In an extreme case, if we look at one of our most more recent wells where we drilled a 2,900-meter horizontal lateral to a measured depth of 6,000 meters, we effectively doubled our reservoir access as compared to a typical well in the past. In this case, we spent far less to drill and complete this well than the costs of two separate horizontal wells. So we would expect a much better rate of return even without the doubling of rates and reserves in this long horizontal well. A typical 1,400-meter horizontal oil-rich well under today's strip pricing and our current cost structure yields about a 35% full-cycle internal rate of return. Although it's still very early, our expectations for this 2,900-meter lateral is that it would yield us something closer to a 50% internal rate of return. Now, there are many factors to consider when drilling these long laterals, and certainly not all of Peyto's well prospects are candidates for long laterals. We need to see how the long-term performance of this well plays out, but it clearly shows the value significance of the gains that we've seen through drilling efficiencies.
Okay. Turning to Scott Robinson, our COO and VP of Operations. Scott, in our first quarter report, we speak to higher royalties, stockpiling operating supplies for the breakup period, and an accelerated maintenance schedule ahead of breakup as contributing to the increased cash costs per MCFE we saw in the first quarter this year. How much will that front-end loading lower costs we expect to see in the subsequent quarters of this year?
Thanks, Jim. I guess what I'll do is I'll address the operating cost part of what you just brought up there. This past quarter, we saw our op costs were up on a per unit basis to 39 cents, which is towards the upper end of our historical range. And we've itemized some of the things that gave cause to this. The front-end spending on chemical supplies and on compressor maintenance were key contributors to that. Looking at chemicals, our methanol purchases were up in part from this inventory building exercise in preparation for the year and for going through breakup here, and in part in response to the high production that we brought into the year from last year's wells, which carried a little higher than normal water production or frack water, load water recovery. So that was driving some higher end chemical costs. We had some downtime during the year. In particular, there was a windstorm, or during the quarter, sorry, in particular, a windstorm in late January gave rise to an extended down period that was beyond our control. And what we did was we slid up some compressor maintenance that we had scheduled for later in the year to take advantage of that down period. And naturally, that skews the first quarter's costs relative to the rest of the year. So in answer to your question on the operating cost part, we would expect our costs to fall back into that typical range of 31 to 37 cents per MCF as we move forward into the year here.
Turning to Kathy Turgeon, our CFO and VP of Finance, we noted that when we renewed and extended our revolving credit facility, that the pricing has improved. Can you give us a rundown on the facility and the impact of these changes going forward?
Thanks, Jim. At the end of April, we extended our $1 billion unsecured covenant-based credit facility for a further 2 years, so we now have a term date of April 2017. We also had a reduction in the stamping fees and the unutilized fees, which translate into a reduction of approximately 30 to 50 basis points in our interest rate and a corresponding reduction in financing costs going forward. Of course, this is limited to funds drawn on our credit facility and does not affect our fixed rate debt.
Okay. Turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration. Dave, in our activity update in our Q1 release, we speak to results driving specific focus in our drilling areas. Can you expand on this in terms of what those results are and where they were different from our expectations?
Jim, some of our areas, such as South Ansell, are really easy to focus on, as all three of the zones we drilled there have exceeded our expectations. So for the remainder of 2014, we'll keep one rig at Ansell drilling 7 to 8 Wilrich and Falera wells, plus one or two Cardium wells. In our Edson area, our strong blue sky results is still looking very good, so we plan to follow it up with four to five more blue skies, plus a couple of Wilrich wells. At Sundance and Obed, the Wilrich has continued to yield strong outcomes, so we've lined up another 21 Wilrich wells in those two areas. Similarly, the upper Falera and Notikewin zones at Sundance and Obed keep meeting or exceeding our expectations, but the middle Falera in Obed has been subpar, so our drilling in this zone for the remainder of 2014 will be focused more up at Sundance. We'll be drilling an additional 18 Falera and 16 Notikewins before year-end in Sundance. Our Cardium results have been mixed. Our Q1 Sundance Cardium wells did not meet expectations compared to 2013 results, but our new results in Wild Hay and Medicine Lodge were good, and we may follow those up before year-end. In our new Pedley area, we drilled two more Notikewin wells, one which was quite good, and we currently plan an additional three wells here for the remainder of the year. Down at Brazeau, we drilled an upper Falher, which did not meet our expectations, but the Wilrich well we drilled and tested early in Q1 appears to be our best result yet. So we'll be keeping one rig permanently drilling Wilrich wells, or primarily drilling Wilrich wells in Brazeau for the remainder of 2014. Now, Brazeau is an expensive area to operate, so we'll be extra focused on keeping costs as low as possible here. And finally, only one well was drilled in Nose Hill during Q1, but that was a solid Wilrich result, and we'll follow that one up with some additional Wilriches plus at least one Nauta Cuin to round out the year.
Okay. Scott, in the first quarter of 2014, we spent a record amount of capital on facilities. Can you speak to the amount of processing and transportation capacity we are adding in 2014?
Jim, we spent $40 million, I believe, for the first quarter. 25 of that went into facility work directly, and about 15 of that went into major strategic pipelines. So I'll give a little color on that. But the 25 that went into facilities was largely focused at compression. We dropped in compressors at new Old Man North plant that you may recall came on last fall and has been growing dramatically. And we dropped in compression at our Swanson plant in preparation for some of the Ansell activity that Dave just spoke of. Collectively, we've added, we dropped in $20 million of compression down at Brazeau. So collectively, this adds up to about 50 million cubic feet per day of capacity increase. We're en route to about 100 million for the year, so we're about halfway on adding the intended capacity increases that we're envisioning. On the pipeline side, I think we noted that we ran a major pipeline down into the Pedley area, a 27-kilometer line. We've also done some Wild Hay sales line work, and we've ran a connector line from our Swanson to our Nose Hill plants, which gives us operating flexibility and some strategic pipe for future expansion. So a busy quarter, $40 million, 25 to facilities, 15 to pipelines, all of which are very critical to strengthen our infrastructure for our ongoing growth.
JP, this year, like we did in 2011, we are drilling and completing as much as possible through breakup. Does this have the potential to drive us beyond the top of our $575 million to $625 million capital spending range that we stated in our year-end report?
Yeah, Jim, coming into 2014, we had planned to shut down our rig activity through breakup, but instead we kept 7 of our 9 rigs running. The accelerating of our capital program, capital spending, was a conscious decision because gas prices remained strong. By accelerating the capital program in the first half, we not only take advantage of the business environment, but we also leave ourselves the flexibility to either spend more than the 625 with board approval, of course, or we can slow down depending on how gas prices and service costs play out going forward, and of course the feedback from our well results. Weather permitting, we would plan to start up our 2 other rigs here in June. If we drill continuously through December with 9 rigs, along with our planned facility projects, we would expect to exceed that $625 million.
Okay. Scott, can you give us an update on where our current production stands?
Current production is right around the 73,000 barrel mark. Just to add some detail behind that, we came into the year at a little bit above that. We've had some successful drilling that has built about 15,000 barrels a day, which has largely, obviously, by deduction, gone towards the offset of production decline from the heavy amount of drilling we did at the end of last year. That batch of new wells that we came into the year with that were on a fairly steep decline are leveling out as we forecasted and expected. And we are very optimistic that from here forward we're going to see some production growth to fill up those facilities that we've put in place. So we're excited about the program that lies ahead to take that production upwards.
Great. Turning to Tim Louie, our VP of Land. Tim, as prices for natural gas rise, how are the prices at the land auctions for prospective lands reacting?
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, we've definitely seen an increase in the average prices paid at this year's Alberta Crown land sales. And this increase is most likely attributed to the rising natural gas prices. Now, the Crown organizes or groups its Crown sale postings into three regions based on geographic location. With respect to the Crown sales in the northern region, which is where Peyto's land holdings are situated, the average price paid to date is up by 25% from a year ago. However, if you look at the northern region sales since our last conference call on March 6, the average price paid per hectare is up by more than 40% versus the same period in 2013. Granted, a lot of the higher priced parcels are for deeper targets such as the Montney, but in general, we have seen increased bid prices at recent Crown sales. So you may ask, will these increased prices affect Peyto's land acquisition strategy? And I would respond that I don't believe our strategy will change at all. Peyto is still in an enviable position with regards to our existing land base and drilling inventory. As of the end of Q1, Peyto held 689 net sections of land. So we'll continue to be disciplined when we evaluate Crown sale parcels. And although we are definitely aware of the higher bid prices, Peyto will only bid on parcels that are supported by a thorough technical evaluation, and we will only bid on parcels if the project makes a profitable return for the company and our shareholders. And keep in mind that Crown sale acquisitions are not the only means to add lands and consequently drill locations to our inventory, since we are always looking for asset acquisitions and farm-ins that will complement our existing asset base.
Okay. So, Darren, investor sentiment for us and natural gas producers in general has been positive for most of the last 2 years. As a somewhat contracyclical business, how does this impact us?
Yeah, Jim, investor sentiment on gas doesn't seem to be so positive today, but maybe that's just a daily blip. Yeah, generally, I think, the sentiment's been still pretty strong, especially with respect to us, I think, despite the fact that gas prices have been fairly low over the last few years. And so it should be. I mean, we've really demonstrated that in a low gas price environment, we've been able to deploy a lot of capital very effectively, generate a ton of return on the wells that we're drilling, build our asset base out significantly. You know, the last 4 years, we've just about quadrupled our production base, all in this sort of $3 gas price environment. So, you know, in many ways, we hope that's going to continue. We're one of those few gas producers that's out there saying that we would like low gas prices so that we can continue to take advantage of a lack of activity in the industry, a lack of competition, as Tim just talked about. You know, as soon as gas prices start to go up, well, then everybody's coming back to the land sales. We've heard lots of rumors about these high gas prices, if they survive the year, it's going to start to drive increases in service costs, book prices going up, cost of drilling and fracs and all the rest of that going up. And the biggest problem is that we've only got about a year of stronger gas prices out in front of us before we're back on the strip, at least, to a low gas price environment again. So you can't really justify spending a lot more for any given well because you're not going to get that much more in terms of gas prices for that long. So, you know, we've had to be very strategic, I think, with the timing of our capital investments. It's very difficult in this industry to stockpile a lot of the materials that we use on the front end. You can't stockpile fracs when they're cheap or drilling rigs when they're cheap. The best you can do is really time your capital investments to go against the grain and to be busy when the industry isn't. And fortunately, as the lowest cost producer in the industry, we've had a lot of cash flow to use in those down cycles. And so, you know, I think investors have come to appreciate our strategy. They realize how smart it is, I think. And so when we put sort of cautionary language in our quarter that says that at these much stronger gas prices, we expect that we're going to have to be careful going forward with increases in costs, that's exactly why. It's because, we expect we're going to be aggressive when the prices are down and we're going to be cautious when the prices are up. It's shareholders' capital that we're investing every day, and we have to do the right thing for that capital. We have to be smart with that capital. The last thing we want to do is to run out like a herd with the rest of the industry and invest a ton of our cash flow at the top of the commodity price cycle when everybody's busy and when the costs are really high, because inevitably that's when our industry tends to destroy value and destroy capital, and you know, the shareholders' capital is precious. We don't want to do that. So this countercyclical strategy is playing out well, and I think we're gonna try and keep it up as much as we can.
Okay. Valerie, at this time, I'd like to turn over the call to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses.
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. Our first question is from Travis Woods with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Quick question, just in terms of how you're thinking about the rest of the year. You may have already touched on this with some of the back and forth that you had earlier in the call, but what type of environment in terms of both the cost side and the gas price side, I know you look at both of the sides of the equation, obviously, what type of environment and what are you looking for before you get comfortable with moving the CapEx number up and taking that into consideration that you accelerated some spending already through the first half of the year?
Thanks for the question, Travis. You know, I think obviously we're running per well economics all the time, looking at the returns that we're getting, looking at, you know, what does a 10% increase in costs do to those returns? What does, you know, 50 cents more on the forward strip do, especially if we start to get some of that strength on the back end of the curve as opposed to just the front end of the curve? You know, ideally, I think if we saw gas prices pull back, you know, say we saw a cool summer and we saw gas prices pull back to just under that $4 mark, I think that'd take a lot of pressure off the industry. I think the talk of all this activity would cool right off again. I think our costs would stay exactly where they are today. And I think that would give us quite a bit more confidence to be aggressive as much as we can be on the backs of our success to spend and invest as much as we possibly could. And as JP alluded to, that might be an increase even off of the 625 that we're currently sort of targeting for this year. You know, conversely, if we see the gas prices strengthen throughout the summer, activity levels pick up and these service costs that we're hearing rumblings about really do start to materialize in a material way, we see a 20 or 30% increase in the capital cost for a well. And we've only got this sort of year out in front of us of a stronger gas price. I mean, we'll run the economics, but I fully expect that it's going to strain the returns. And, you know, do you really want to participate in the very short term in that kind of environment, spending a whole lot more for wells when you're not getting a better return? So, you know, it definitely is an economic analysis of the incremental cost relative to the commodity price you're getting. But remember, it's not just service costs. It's not just the price of the services. It tends to a lot of time be the quality of the service that you get too. When things get busy, not only do we see book prices going up, but we also see experience levels in the industry go down because as the industry service industry has to expand and hire a bunch of new people, they've got to train those people. There's a lack of experience in the industry. Mistakes get made. Those mistakes cost us at the end of the day. That's the type of thing that really starts to factor in when the industry starts to pick up its activity in a big way. And so it's not just the book price increases, it's the cost of the mistakes. And it's that execution risk that actually increases in the busy times in the industry. And so that's a risk that we're always trying to mitigate. Obviously, Peyto, I think, has done an exceptional job of mitigating execution risk. Continuous operations help keep that at bay, working in the same areas, doing the same kind of things, using the same services. All of that lowers our execution risk and allows us to be more repeatable. But at the end of the day, you know, if we start to lose that and those risks start to increase, then those costs are going to increase. And again, that grinds away on the returns that we can generate on that capital. So we have to be cautious in those environments. But, you know, right now it could go either way. And we're nimble. We're obviously a small company when it comes to the staff that we've got. It's a big capital program, but it's very nimble. We control it all. We're the ones in control of all those capital dollars being invested, so we can change quite quickly in reaction to those market conditions.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You bet.
Thank you. Our next question is from Kevin Kaiser with Hedgeye Risk Management. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, Kevin.
So we're about a month into breakup here, and this is a new strategy for the company to work through breakup. So just wondering what you think, you know, how this is panning out so far. I know we probably won't really see the full results until we get later into the year, but you know, what are your thoughts on how running through breakup is going, and is this something that you expect to do next year and, you know, continuing?
Yeah, it's not the first time, just to, I guess, clarify. We have had activity through breakup in the past, but it's working out well so far for us this year, largely in part to the conditions that we've encountered. We've got 7 of the 9 rigs running right now without any major concerns, moving them around. That could all change in a heartbeat if a strong period of rain were to move in on us. So to answer the second part of your question on a go forward, yeah, I think we would intend to carry out activity through breakup insofar as breakup conditions continue to allow us to do such this year, next year, or any other year. With all the other conditions for activity being in the right situation as well. We are learning this year in conducting a high level of activity through breakup that the operational continuity that we're preserving is working out very nicely and should avoid any kind of startup type issues that we might have seen through, you know, protracted periods of inactivity in the past. So, you know, we're very happy with that. We've inventoried a number of wells that we have yet to get to for completion here, and we may be a little slow on the completion of some of these wells as we come towards the end of breakup or towards the, you know, mid to end part of May when conditions can typically get wet as we move forward.
Okay. And then appreciate all the color on the specific well results for the different fields and the zones, but I guess if you were to take a step back and just look at the overall performance of the entire program, how is that trending, you know, over time? You know, how is the overall program, the success of the program, the returns trending versus, you know, last quarter or first quarter 2013?
We tend to look back at, we just went through a process internally here where we look back on our results from prior years and we often compare the costs and the production profile, and of course the returns associated with that for each of these wells, and we're showing the consistently repeatable program that we've had in the past, so no concerns over that. We're obviously moving into different areas. Dave alluded to some of the new things we're doing, so we'll continue to layer that stuff in with as we push out beyond some of the other areas in that Sundance area as well. So far, so good as far as results go as compared to the past.
Okay. And then I think correct me if I'm wrong here, but the last production guidance I have for you guys, it was around 80,000 BOEs per day at year end, and year end 14. And knowing what you know now, assuming the capital budget that was associated with that guidance, is that still a good number to go off of?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're still kind of targeting that range. Timing has a little bit to do, obviously, with hitting an exit number. As we saw last year, you know, if we delay some of the production additions and put them all on in November and December, well, we tend to exceed where we would have thought we would have been with all that same gas had it been added more continuously through the year. And same goes this year. If, you know, we add on the program we originally envisioned, then it would come in probably just north of that 80,000 barrels a day mark for, say, 6 1/4. But if we add it all in the second and third quarters and then we don't add much in the fourth quarter, well, you know, maybe we actually hit our peak a little earlier in the year and the actual exit volume is a little shy of that. So, it, you know, the timing kind of does have a bit of an impact on that. We're not obviously focused on an exit number. We're focused on the returns that we're generating on those capital dollars. So as long as the well results are generating the typical returns that we've enjoyed and that we're expecting from this type of activity, that, as JP alluded to, then, you know, we're going to be happy with the capital program for the year, regardless of sort of where it leaves us at the end of the year.
Right. And then on cost industry-wide cost inflation, and this is something you guys are always vigilant on. Is it more other than the increase in the acreage prices, have you seen anything yet that's concrete in terms of rig rates are actually moving up on you, or completion costs are moving up on you? Or is it just more concern that, you know, if we, you know, the rumors of increased activity in the back half of the year might pick it up?
I think at this point it's more talk than it is real bills. We've seen some submissions of cost increases for the remainder of the year, in terms of bid prices. But I don't think we've paid an invoice that's necessarily more yet. We track a basket of goods. Sometimes it's hard because obviously any given well drills differently, and so you have to track an individual component to start to see some of those inflationary pressures, right? So the same kind of bit, a bag of mud materials, a trucking rate. You're trying to pick things that your prices that you can compare that are apples to apples type comparisons. And I think, over time we have seen some inflationary effect on those prices. It's been rather minor, sort of 3% on average per year type inflation, which you kind of would expect anyway, because there's underlying labor inflation, there's energy costs inflation, that kind of thing. So, I mean, you don't totally expect that costs stay completely flat, but as long as we haven't seen any big moves in those things, but like you say, we're vigilant, we're looking at them very closely, and we can know when we see those because, we're the ones actually spending the dollars. It's not some partner that's spending the dollars and we're getting the bills for it 2 months or 3 months later and we find out that, holy cow, prices have gone up a lot. We're spending those dollars every day, so we know right away if we start to see some inflation there. So, do you want to add anything, Scott?
That's great.
Maybe just add a little bit. We have really strong service relationships with the key providers of the things that add up to in our cost world, from our rig companies to our tubular suppliers to our mud suppliers and what have you. And I think we, in times when costs might come under some pressure for inflation, there's a pretty strong understanding and commitment from those suppliers to us to keep their costs low in recognition for the continuous activity that we provide to them. So our, as Darren pointed out, we look at this basket of goods. We've been doing that since the mid-2000s, and there are ups and downs, but in general we've smoothed that out, and a lot of that has to do with keeping competition and real strong relationships going in our in the important parts of our business.
One of the things that we talked a little bit about, Kevin, was that the continuous operations and the advantage that that gives us. And, one of the considerations is obviously the cost of the services that we purchase to drill and complete wells. The other is the quality of the service that we're getting. And, being able to continue working with these same rigs and these same crews that we worked with all winter long, that are now very proficient and very practiced at the types of wells we're drilling, they probably would have liked to have a little bit of a break and go on holidays, but we're taking advantage of the fact that it's a well-oiled machine out there, right? And we're keeping it rolling forward as we go. And so all of those gains that we made in terms of efficiency and execution, we're trying to keep those rolling forward. And, the quality and the experience that we've got out in the field today is top-notch. I mean, it's born out of a lower activity level where we've really high-graded to the best of the best. And if we can keep working with that for as long as we can, obviously that staves off all the mistakes and it staves off a lot of the cost. So even if the book prices go up a little bit, but we get the same people and the same equipment and we can keep it moving, we can mitigate sort of the bigger part of that cost increase, and that is some of the dilution in the experience levels that tends to happen when the industry gets busy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Just last one for me here on the drilling and completion techniques, optimal lateral lengths, seeing some positive results there, and obviously the one 2,900 meter lateral was quite strong. What's the opportunity there going forward? Have you sort of amended any of the drilling plans this year to take laterals that were going to be shorter and extended them? You know, what can we expect for lateral lengths going forward?
Well, I think as JP alluded to, we'll actually give this this well a little bit of time and see how it really works out. Early day test rates are just that, they're early day. So we'll take that into account. Right now, there's a mix of lateral lengths in our drill plans, and we in fact. When we went into this winter, we had anticipated maybe doing a few more longer ones. We cut some of those back, but based on this result, we'll probably look to extend a few in the appropriate locations. There are other things besides the length. There's a lot of discontinuity between one section of land versus another section of land where the mineral rights aren't contiguous. They differ from one section to the other, so it's not always seamless to extend a lateral length over two sections. So it has to be taken on a case-by-case basis, and I'd say right now that it looks positive, but we have to wait a little bit longer, and we'll, like everything else we do, we take current results and fine-tune things going forward, and that's nothing new. We've been doing it for several years now, and we'll just continue to do that. And as Darren was saying, this, we've got a small team, and we're in really close contact here. Got a small premises. We see things that aren't working. We fix them very fast. And when we see things that are working, we jump on them. So I'll just leave it at
great.
That.
Great. Guys, thanks a lot for the time. I really appreciate it.
You bet, Kevin. Thanks for questions.
There are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting back over to you, Mr. G.
Great. Well, thanks to everybody for listening in. It's been a busy couple of weeks of releases, so I'm sure everybody's still absorbing all the industry results. I think our quarter was a good one, and one that we kind of expected. We were grinding away as we always do, and we've continued that pace of activity right into the second quarter here. So we're quite optimistic about putting up some strong second quarter results as we move forward, and we'll be back to you in midsummer to talk about those. And it'll be interesting to see how the whole gas price environment evolves as we're moving deeper into the summer and into the injection season. So until August, thanks again.